Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
216-474-0092 if you want to jump in. We got Chris Fedor coming up at 9. Before that, though, Nate Davis of USA Today going to join us here in about 20 minutes. And we'll react to, or get his reaction to, the piece that he wrote about Shador Sanders and how his speeding ticket problem is something to be concerned about. So, but Darryl, before we get to Nate, I brought this up with you pre-show. We were talking about it a little bit last night, and I wanted to get to it because I think because of how the Haslams have set up the contracts of Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski, I think it's pretty obvious that they are tied to each other by the nature of that situation. Yes, but what I find interesting is, in previous years, I would have said that I thought Kevin Stefanski was more safe, quote-unquote, than Andrew Berry. I would have thought that Kevin Stefanski was viewed more favorably in the organization than Andrew Berry. And I do still think maybe right now that's probably true. But here's the thing.
I don't think one's viewed more favorably than the other probably, in the organization.
Okay, yes, within the organization, you're right. But within the fan base, I think there's been like, I think there's a lot
of
people.
That's different. I mean, they're
fans. For sure,
yeah.
For sure. But I do think like Andrew Berry gets criticized a lot for his draft picks and the fact that he hasn't been able to hit on a lot of guys. And I think Kevin Stefanski, there's a little more grace there where they're like, well, hey, we've seen him do it with certain thing, with certain players, certain teams. We've seen him make the playoffs. He's taken this team to places it's never been before. They got to go back to his offense and see what he can do. Like, I just think there's been a more favorable standpoint or viewpoint on Stefanski than there maybe has Andrew Berry. But what I think is interesting is this year, while I would have said like last year, maybe it was Stefanski who was safe and Berry who's on a hotter seat because his drafts just haven't been there. And he's the guy who's going to forever be associated with the worst trade in NFL history with the Deshaun Watson situation. He has to own that. I would have said probably this time last year, Stefanski's safe and Andrew Berry's maybe on a hotter seat. But I'm kind of wondering, as we get ready for 2025, I think this year's draft class for Andrew Berry has a chance to be like his Sistine Chapel, if you will. Like, I do, like...
You're stealing my bit, because I've been saying this for a few weeks. This rookie class has the potential to be more impactful than the 2028 class.
Yeah.
When you, because the interest, well, first of all, he has the picks. He had the picks this year. That's the first part, right? He actually had picks to use. But also, too, these guys are going to start. Mason Graham's going to start at defensive tackle.
Right? Sean Judkins is going to start.
Yep. You know, you're going to see a lot of Sampson as well. And Sampson's going to get used in the passing game.
Carson Schwessinger's probably going to be a starter.
He's your JOK replacement.
Right.
Okay. Fannin, you're going to see a lot of him in those two tight end sets.
Especially with no wide receivers. Like, they have no wide
receivers. David Njoku. Yeah, absolutely. This rookie class, it is setting up to be potentially extremely impactful. Now, on paper, it looks fantastic. It looks like Andrew Berry just absolutely slayed in the draft.
Yeah.
But if I had a dollar for every time the Cleveland Browns look good on paper, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you this morning. Darryl be owning his own private island somewhere and enjoying life on
a
beach.
For sure. And so here's the thing. Like, I think you're right with this take, and I've heard you mention this before, which is where I think took this in a different direction and where I want to go here. Because I think there's a really good chance this is like Andrew Berry's best draft class. And that we walk away from this having starting to change our opinions about like, okay, can he draft and develop talent? If three guys at least from this class hit and become like foundational pieces for the team, Mason Graham should be one. He better be one because you picked him fit number 5 overall.
Right.
If Quinshon becomes the star running back, if Schwessinger is a really solid linebacker, if Fannin becomes like your tight end of the future, you could have 3 or 4 guys here that like you feel really good about, and all of a sudden you're like, all right, we changed the trajectory of this team. And if that happens, I almost wonder now if like the conversation around hot seat flips because you could have a really bad season still. Like, this team could be really bad. And we start to say, maybe Kevin Stefanski's not the right guy for this job. Maybe what he wants to do isn't getting through. Maybe he loses the locker room. But Andrew Berry finally got some draft picks right. Andrew Berry finally got some guys here that you feel like you can build around. And so I almost wonder if, I understand they're tied together, and so this is probably a moot point anyway in terms of like how Jimmy Haslam's going to go about these things, because he's already signaled to you he's keeping these guys together. He wants to give them a chance to sort of see this thing through post Deshaun Watson trade.
Right.
But I do wonder if like we could get to the end of the season, and if they stink, but we see these players that Andrew Berry drafted really standing out and giving you hope for the future, if they maybe just say, hey, you know what? Maybe we need to change the voice in the locker room, but Andrew Berry, you can stay because we think that you have started to build something and gotten this team in the right place, and we're going to give you a chance to draft the quarterback, which is ultimately the thing that he's going to be judged by the most, is what quarterback he gets and develops into a potential franchise guy.
Well, he's drafted quarterbacks. He drafted DTR. Now he's drafted Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, for me, it's not about if when it comes to these rookies, okay? It's about they better be good. They better be impactful players. Or else Andrew Berry's not going to be here.
Yeah.
Like that for me, I'm not even looking it through the lens, Spencer, of, well, if they do this or this and this, then the Browns can be this, that, whatever. No, it's they better be good. They better be impactful. Now, I'm not saying they got to be future Hall of Famers or Pro Bowlers, but they better be significant contributors, because if they're not, A, Andrew Berry is going to be unemployed, and B, this team isn't going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah.
So, you know, this isn't like a couple of years ago. The reason they made, I had this conversation with someone last night that I was talking to. You know, yes, the results of the Deshaun Watson trade were a complete unmitigated train wreck, okay? But the premise behind the trade is absolutely right. They felt they were a quarterback away, okay? That's what they felt like. They were a quarterback away, so they went all in, and they went all in with Deshaun Watson. It's not worked out. So you understand the premise of the thought, but like when you're talking about this draft class, yeah, they have to hit.
Yeah.
Jed Wills was a miss.
Right.
I'm going to say Greg Newsom was a hit because he is a contributor. Now, you judge the hits on, do you get the second contract? Greg Newsom's a good football player.
He's
I don't think Greg Newsom, if he doesn't get a second contract from the Browns, it's not because he's
not.
Well,
it's only two guys
good
that have gotten the second contract. It's JOK and it's Grant Delpit.
I understand. I get it. But I'm just saying, like, if you, like we were talking earlier about Darius Garland, if they trade Darius Garland, it's not a reflection on Darius Garland as a basketball player. He's still very, very good. It's about fit.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way about Greg Newsom. He's a very good player. They just may not have the fit from either a salary cap standpoint, a roster building standpoint, whatever. But that doesn't mean that Andrew Berry missed the pick. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, for sure.
So, and then the 3 years where they were without picks, okay, it's really hard to like rail on Andrew Berry because he missed third, fourth, fifth, the sixth, and seventh round picks.
True.
Okay.
But
you're judged
the
on
guy
your first
that
and
he
second round
idolizes,
picks.
The franchise that he comes from, the Eagles, they hit on third round picks. And he also, like, a couple of those years, they had second-round picks that they decided not to use, or they traded back, or they got out of the second round and went to the third round. And so they were stacking the odds against themselves.
Right.
And when you do that to yourself, like, you are going to be judged by those picks ultimately, because it's like, hey, yeah, you're not going to have this as good of players to choose from when you're picking in the second and third round or beyond. But you're also banking on, we think we can do this, and he hasn't been able to identify the diamonds in the rough in those rounds to sort of build and supplement the roster. So, but again, back to my original point, I just wonder if, like, you said it has to happen. I agree. It has to happen that at least three players in this class.
Mason Graham has to be a hit.
For sure.
Quinshon Judkins has to be a hit.
Yeah.
Schlesinger, you know what?
I think Schlesinger does kind of have to be a hit, though, because he was the first pick of the second round. Like, and there were still a number of good players on the board.
And he's probably the replacement for JOK.
Yeah.
And I mean that with all due respect. Like, right. I know JOK's out this year, and we'll see about going forward.
Right.
But, like, let's use a little common sense
for sure.
here.
For sure.
And, you know, I don't think they make that pick if they're absolutely confident that JOK is in the fold in 2026. Okay.
But if that happens, if these guys hit the way we're talking about, does that mean that there's a world where Andrew Berry, you get to the end of the season, you're like, all right, well, he finally got you some guys that you feel like you can build around. Let's see what he can do next year, even potentially drafting a quarterback in the first round and making that a high priority. And maybe Kevin Stefanski isn't here if this is a 4-5-win team again. Or do you think they would both still be together at that point?
They're joined at the hip. And here's the thing. So let's go by your premise, right? Let's say this class hits. They do this year. Now, they might not win a lot of games, but Mason Graham, you see that he's got future Pro Bowl, All-Pro potential, right? Schlesinger, you know, it looks like he can be a starting caliber linebacker. You get Quinshon Judkins. He looks like he's a future All-Pro running back. And then, I don't know, Fannin or another member of this club, right? Let's say you get three or four of these guys that look like he absolutely nailed the pick. Berry's not going anywhere. And I'm going to tell you right now, Kevin Stefanski's not going to go anywhere either. Because it's going to be, hey, we got some young pieces finally in here to supplement the veterans, and let's see how this thing develops. Yeah. I think the leash for Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry goes through 2026. Now, the only way I think that potential change could come after this season is if the building falls apart.
Yeah, that's always the thing. Stefanski loses the locker room, and guys, and listen, like,
and Stefanski and Berry stop working well together, because when you look at when the Haslams made changes, and look, over the years prior to this particular regime, it was a turnstile out there between coaches and GMs and executives and all that. The reality is, one of the premises behind, or the impetuses, I should say, behind those changes was the fact that the coach and the GM did not work together. Stefanski and Berry work well together. You've not heard one story, locally or nationally, about their conflicts. There have been conflicts between them. Their conflicts have never, ever become public.
Yeah, they stayed in-house. And I will say, like, all this is part of the reason why, you know, you bring up the losing locker room thing. That is the biggest thing that could change. And that's why I think the quarterback competition is really important, because if Kevin Stefanski picks the wrong guy, he can't fool this locker room. Like, he can't tell them this is the guy that gives us the best chance to win, like he tried to do with Deshaun last year. They're going to know what they see in training camp, who they think is the best quarterback. And so he's going to have to pick the right guy when this is all said and done, when training camp wraps. Daryl and I have talked ad nauseum about the Shador Sanders situation. We've had some jokes at the expense of it, with people calling in here and there. Speeding,
is it appropriate for us to joke about
stories.
It, though?
I mean, I think it's, I don't know, we're not like making light of it, like,
right,
he shouldn't have done it, like he should, like, it's fine that he did it. Everyone's calling in and making their, telling us their stories about the speeding tickets that they got. I mean, Lou told us he was going 140 on I-70, 71.
I proposed the Garrett Gordon Speedway.
Speedway. I mean, I don't know. I think we have had the appropriate amount of, like, seriousness and, you know, comedic relief at the same time, to break up the monotony of this topic, because it is one of the only things kind of going on in the Browns' purview right now, as they are sort of on summer vacation. But to here to break it down with us and talk about it some more, we have Nate Davis of the USA Today, who wrote a piece, a column, with his thoughts on the Shador Sanders speeding ticket situation. And Nate, I'm curious to pick your brain here, because you see this as maybe the start of a concerning trend for a young quarterback who's a fifth-round pick and trying to find his footing in the NFL.
I mean, Shador is messing with my summer vacation. You know, like you said, there's nothing else going on. I kind of, the first version I wrote of it, guys, like, I kind of tried to make the point that I don't think that, you know, taking this, just the incidents themselves is that big a deal. I mean, I've got a bit of a heavy times, and, you know, certainly, you know, there was no driving under the influence, there were no accidents, you know, who knows what the circumstances were, but, you know, kind of hard not to read it as guys trying to get home at night and driving a little too fast. But the point I made is that, you know, as you guys know, I mean, the Browns made heavy investments in Baker Mayfield and Deshaun Watson and you know, traded back to get Johnny Manziel. There's a history of them, you know, making bad choices with quarterbacks, and, you know, maybe should put Baker in that category, obviously, but they didn't do that with Shedeur Sanders. So I think the worst thing he's doing here is giving them a reason to be like, well, you know, we can easily cut this quarterback competition down from 4 to 3. And I'm not saying that this would be the reason, but, you know, when you're in a four-way competition, don't give your team, you know, any reason to get rid of you. When really is you know, a guy who's basically a fifth-round flyer, by definition, they don't need a reason to get rid of you.
Yeah, Nate, I mean, look, it comes down to decision-making, right? And as a quarterback, you have to be on point at all times with your decision-making process. And, you know, it started out okay. It was one speeding ticket. He was going, he was, you know, clocked 101. And then it came out yesterday. Oh, by the way, there was another ticket where he got clocked at 91. And, you know, the team says, hey, he's going to take care of it and whatnot. The question I want to ask you is about the supporting cast around him. And the reason I ask that is because there was a video posted by one of the folks who posts regularly about Shedeur, like videos and whatever. And there was a gentleman, this was at the celebrity softball game David Njoku held last night up here. And there was someone next to him. He's just a kid. It's not a big deal. He's done nothing wrong, whatever. And then Shedeur had to interject and say, I made some bad choices. I'm going to learn from this, etc. My question is he surrounded by the right people considering everything that happened in the pre-draft process, right? That told him he was going to be a top five pick, so he acted like it, ended up in the fifth round. Does he got to kind of clean up the house a little bit around him?
I mean, I haven't been around him enough to know. I mean, I've seen the video, and it's like one of those things, like if you actually just saw what he said, you know, in a statement or something that, you know, I've made some wrong decisions or whatever, like you wouldn't think twice about it. Like, okay, you know, yeah. let's move on from this. The way he delivered it, you know, he is at a charity softball game, and he's kind of joking around with his buddies, and like it seems more flippant when you actually see him say it. And again, I don't know that we need to kill the guy for driving, you know, too fast. But like if you're gonna say it with a serious face, and then just let's just try to nip this issue in the bud. Like don't seem like, you know, that, but like you said, the whole decision making and the quarterback is the face of the team. Like, you know, just say this thing with a little bit of seriousness so we can all move on from it, you know. But in terms of the whole, is he surrounded by the right people? You know, I can't speak to Shedeur's circle there, but I mean, the other thing about all this that to me is a bit of a red flag was that there was the concern that, you know, this is the first time he's away from his dad. And, you know, college programs and media access and all that stuff is generally much more tightly controlled because college football coaches, you know, run the roost. That's not necessarily the case in the NFL. And I think, you know, if Deion was the coach of the Browns, I'm not sure we'd know about any of this. But, you know, this is also the kind of thing where I think Shedeur has a little bit less margin for error, but he's got to kind of navigate all this new responsibility and being a guy in the professional workforce without his dad there basically to act as a safety net.
It's an interesting point, especially because that was one of the big criticisms against Shedeur during the pre-draft process was like, who is he going to be without his dad there every step of the way? Nate Davis of USA Today joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. I want to go more at large with the Browns here, Nate, as we get ready for the 2025 season. And last year, the Browns were considered probably one of the better rosters in football. And I know there was people sort of picking them as like a dark horse, you know, make a deep playoff run type of team. And 1 year later, they're now considered one of the worst rosters in football. So I guess my question in this is, are we maybe underestimating how good this Browns team could ultimately...
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? the real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks, the three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Be if they just get competent quarterback play this season.
It's probably one of those things, I think, where the truth is a little bit in the middle. You know, I think to me, one area that wasn't as good as I thought it could be or should be was the offensive line. You know, usually with Teller and Petonio, that's a pretty strong unit, but they've had some issues there. I think Kevin Stefanski is a great coach. Are you going to get another performance out of Joe Flacco in 2025, assuming he's the starter that you did in 2023? I mean, maybe. He was great in spots with the Colts last year, but I want to count on that. But to me, the other component is how many games are the Browns going to win in the division? Because, I mean, it seems like all three teams are well ahead of them. And it seems like they always get Pittsburgh once and always get Cincinnati at home. So maybe that's not a big deal. Maybe they're going to win at least two games in the division. But it just seems like that, particularly with the question of quarterback, and it also seems like given the possibility that there could be multiple turnover at that position, depending on the way this season goes, we'll see. I mean, there are certainly still good players in this roster. I just kind of wonder what is really the upper ceiling. And then, given they've got the two first-round picks next year, it might work out better if they're not great. We'll see.
Nate, on paper, this rookie class looks like Andrew Berry may have hit it out of the park. For you, though, who is the most important rookie for the Browns to have success this coming season?
I think the low-hanging fruit is probably, Mason Graham. And just, what is this guy going to bring to your line in terms of, what is his ability to play off Myles Garrett and create a bunch of disruption in there when this team has to go out and take down guys like Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson to be competitive in this division. What can Mason Graham do to make Myles Garrett even better than he already is? So, I don't know anybody really saw him winding up with the Browns, and obviously that's a function of the trade out of the two spot. But I think that's probably the first guy I would look at there. But I mean, to me, Judkins is also a guy. I just like, the attitude I think he can bring, and I think that will also be a real important component to the offense. When you don't have Nick Chubb anymore, I don't know that he can be a galvanizing kind of leader, particularly as a rookie, obviously, that Nick Chubb was for so long. But I do think that he can replace something that they had kind of lost when Chubb had been hurt in recent years, and that might help everybody, offensive line, quarterback, whoever on the offensive side, if he can bring that kind of hammer element back to the running game.
Nate Davis joining us on the show here. I want to go more broadly inside the AFC North. I think it was last week. All these weeks are blurring together now. Aaron Rodgers obviously officially signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I guess I'm just curious from your perspective, like how much more does Aaron Rodgers actually have in the tank? Does this change the math at all for the Pittsburgh Steelers in terms of what their ceiling is, which we know their ceiling right now is basically make the playoffs and lose in the first round? Does this help them get further in the postseason? What do you sort of expect for that team with Aaron Rodgers now at the helm?
Yeah, you kind of said it, and I've kind of been critical of the Steelers for the quarterback management, specifically for the last year. They needed a quarterback. He needed a place to work. Obviously, he still wants to play. But yeah, I mean, to me, they look like they're still kind of stuck in their 10-7 kind of mode. Get into the wild card round, and are you really going to beat any of the better teams in the AFC at that point? On paper, I'd say probably no. Particularly if you're going to wind up again playing at Arrowhead or playing at Baltimore, or whatever it is. So to me, they're just kind of treading water, a year from now, they're back. I mean, no offense to the Browns fans, but I mean, you're back drafting in the 20s in the Kenny Pickett zone, the Paxton Lynch zone, that kind of guy that, when a quarterback lasts into the 20s in the first round of the draft, like he's not really, you help them see quarterbacks like NBA lottery picks. Like if they're not getting taken in the top five, it's not the same kind of guy you're getting. So I feel like they just continue to kick the can down the road at that position. You know, 1 year contract and a year from now, really, where are we going to be?
Nate, the Ravens signed Jaire Alexander after he was released from the Packers. So basically the rich get richer within the division. Is this the Ravens division to lose? And where do you think they fit now in the big picture of trying to finally get back to the Super Bowl there with Lamar Jackson at the helm?
Yeah, to me right now, the Ravens, I think I would probably rank them as the second team in the league behind Philadelphia. I've seen a lot of the Ravens. I live in the D.C. area. I get to a lot of their games. You can't question the talent throughout that roster. And to me, the amazing thing about them is that Lamar Jackson, as good as he is, seems to get better every year. Still really hasn't found his ultimate ceiling. I don't know that they're missing anything on this roster on paper. I think again, probably the hardest thing for them is playing in a tough division, and that makes it harder to win that number one seed. They did have the home field advantage 2 years ago and didn't work out against the Chiefs, but I haven't made up my mind yet, but I think the Ravens may be the team I'm going to pick to win, certainly win the AFC, and we'll kind of see beyond that.
Staying in the division one more time with the Bengals, obviously, offensively, like they're going to be a juggernaut. We know that. When you have Joe Burrow at quarterback, you have the receivers that they prioritize keeping around this offseason, they're bound to be really good on that side of the ball. But the defense has a lot of questions. Trey Hendrickson, obviously, going through a holdout situation with their top pick isn't now showing up to workouts and camp and all those different things. So what should we expect from the Cincinnati Bengals, who seem to be dealing with a lot of turmoil, but at the same time, have one of those coveted franchise quarterbacks that always give you a chance?
Yeah, I think they should be better, hopefully. I mean, as bad as the defense was last year, I mean, I'm guessing at the end of the day, Trey Hendrickson will be back in the fold, and certainly Shamar Stewart at some point, I think, will decide to get in, and they'll resolve his language. But if that defense goes from terrible to average or maybe just a little bit below average, I mean, I think this is a team that can kind of be back where they were a few years ago, where they're in the mix for the AFC Championship game, and we know what that means. But they're also kind of doing the same thing to some degree, where every year with the Bengals, it's getting off to a slow start. And I mean, you know, last year losing that Week One opener at home to the Patriots, I mean, pretty good point to that is the reason that ultimately they didn't make the playoffs. I mean, you get that win against a bad team. You're not scrambling at the end and hoping to backdoor your way in. But yeah, they've got all the talent in the world. I mean, lots of weapons. I still think I worry a little bit about Joe Burrow's protection and some, I think it could be better, but he is obviously, as we know, a great quarterback. I'm interested what Chase Brown might bring to the running game this year, but the wild card is the defense, and then, you know, the further wild card is that they changed coordinators and brought in Al Golden, and how is that going to look this year? But you wouldn't think, you know, assuming that they at least have all their guys back, or the ones that they're supposed to have anyway, that it can't be as bad as it was a year ago. But they've got to get rid of these distractions, and they can't do another 1-3 kind of September.
He's Nate Davis, covers the NFL for USA Today. Check out his latest column on Shador Sanders titled Beware Shador Sanders, Browns Could Cut You for Less Than Speeding Tickets. It's a really well done article. I think he did a nice job sort of capturing and encapsulating what this story should mean, and specifically to Shador Sanders. So check that out if you can. Nate, we are grateful for you giving us some time here on a Friday. Thank you so much, my man, and take care.
Okay, pleasure. Thank you.
Nate Davis again, USA Today on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I thought it was actually a really good point about his dad. By the way, as you guys have, if you've been listening for most of the morning, you know Darrell Ryder is here. He usually joins the boys this morning on Fridays, and when he does, he's brought to you by Scheibman Jewelers. But today you get to hear him for the full 4 hours, which we have about an hour and 15 minutes left.
Cleveland's premier jewelry store.
Yes, that's right. Sorry. I cut us a little bit short there, Owen. I apologize.
Well, they need to know where the premier jewelry store is. Scheibman Jewelers.
I agree with everything Nate said there, with one exception. We would have still found out about the speeding tickets. If you get pulled over in Strongsville, Westlake.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.
Do you know what went down at the Viper Room the night River Phoenix died? Or how about the mysterious death of Brittany Murphy? Are you aware of how Steve McQueen escaped murder at the hands of the Manson family? The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton? The real-life murder that inspired David Lynch's Twin Peaks? The three conspiracies surrounding Marilyn Monroe's death? These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Hollywoodland is hosted by me, Jake Brennan, creator of the award-winning music and true crime podcast, Disgraceland. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Right. The I-team's going to hear about it.
Well, and that was also my argument. Like, there was a lot of people who were like, if this was Dylan Gabriel, no one would even be talking about it. I was like, no. Like, they absolutely would be talking about it. We talk about this with every play. It could be anybody on the roster, pretty much. And if we found out, like, if especially a quarterback, like a high-profile player that's a third-round pick for this team, he's a rookie. It's not like we're talking about, like, Juwan Briggs or something here. Like, we're talking about a rookie quarterback. If it was either one of them, we would have talked about it. We would have reported it. We would have had it. It would have been a conversation of some sort. So I just think that's patently false that people are even bringing that up.
And yes, it would confirm that Dylan Gabriel can see over the steering wheel and drive a car.
Too far down.
Oh, Daryl.
Here, I'm going to do this.
Reckless speculation.
And it probably doesn't apply, but it keeps me out of Daryl's little mess that he's creating.
I totally deserve that.
He didn't want to comment on, what was it that I said earlier? Oh, you didn't want to comment on me making a joke about David Njoku not showing up to his own softball game, which is something he would 100% would do. But then you make the joke about Dylan Gabriel being short. That's where you draw the line, is David Njoku?
Well, so there, I'm not very good.
Could have been a posture joke. You don't know.
Listen, okay, I realize my skill set in life is really limited. There are two things I'm really good at: making short jokes and making fat jokes. Okay, Ken Carmen and Nick Wilson are exhibits A and B to support that statement, and Dylan Gabriel now is exhibit C.
Yeah, that's fair. We do have a lot of low hanging fruit when it comes to the fat jokes at the station, so I'm with you on that. I guess when
it comes, it's a buffet. To, let's just put it that way.
There's no fruit involved in that.
Mixing a salad, will you?
Now Nick Wilson is going to come after you in the afternoon show. Normally he can go back and forth, but now he's going to go for dinner. It's fine. You guys are cool.
You act like that's news or something.
I had a whole conversation with Nick about how you guys are burger friends, and I'm not in that conversation. I'm not part of that list. I'm not a burger friend with Nick. He would never invite me over for burgers. So I think you guys can take jabs at each other. It's okay.
Nick's family to me, though.
That's true.
Ken's family to me. True. Your family to me.
Oh, I appreciate that, Daryl.
If I had a cookout, I'd invite you.
I appreciate that. If I had a cookout as well, if I was doing a cookout that was like, hey, I'm inviting people from work, you would absolutely be on the list. Nice. And so, well, Nick Wilson would have been on that list, but now that I found out we're not burger friends, maybe he's not on the
list. Yeah, but you know what? You
Mythical, hypothetical cookout list invitees. Let's go.
Invitees. Power rank of...
Power rank the invitees. Okay. Well, I would go Anthony Lima.
Okay.
Because he just, you know, it's live.
The conversation.
100%. Yeah.
He'd have a lot to bring
to the
table.
He came to my girl's graduation party. It was great. He did a little mingling.
Are the families coming too? Is it just the...
No. Jeff Thomas.
Okay.
Ken Carmen.
Okay.
Although, I would have to make sure that, you know, we had enough for multiple courses.
So we're down to either... It's either Nick or me. It sounds like...
And Nick Wilson. Wow. Nick Wilson's top of the list. He's number one on the list because, again, we're family.
Okay.
Spence, you can come to my fake ice cream social.
But you know
I
what,
I appreciate
though?
The invite, Owen.
But, Spencer, you would be on the list. You would absolutely 100% be on that list.
I appreciate that. No, I think Daryl and I have gotten a lot closer over the last couple of years, especially being on the Browns beat, working together more here. We had some fun on Sundays for a few weeks there until the schedule sort of changed things around a little bit. But no,
the powers to be are like, yeah, we need to separate these two.
That probably is somewhat of what happened there.
Daryl, so we talked earlier in the show about the finals reaching a game seven. First time we're getting to game seven since, well, the memorable 2016 season when the Cavaliers pulled off the 3-1 comeback and beat the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
And I do think, like, if Cavs fans are looking for something to, a reason to, like, enjoy 2 to 3 more days of NBA finals coverage, this is the, like, this is your their time. This is the time for Cavaliers fans to shine, because the next 2 to 3 days are just going to be filled with highlights of that game seven. It's because it's the most recent one in an NBA finals. It's going to be the LeBron blocking the shot. It's going to be remembering those moments and, oh, here's this historic thing that happened. And can the Pacers be the first team to do this? And can the Thunder be the first team to do that? So you are going to be inundated for the next couple days with pure Cleveland Cavaliers from 2016 and their championship run highlights. And that, I would say, is a win. It's a small, small victory after a disappointing Cavalier season that you at least get to reminisce for a couple extra days here about that memorable season, especially just a couple days removed, or actually the game will be a couple days removed, but just yesterday was obviously the 9th anniversary of that comeback win and then pulling it off in the Game 7 to win the finals in 2016.
So Amazon Prime did a Game 7 series, and I just don't know how in their right mind they did not include
Was it like a ranking?
No, not. It was a series where they. Oh. It was a documentary series of these game sevens, right? They did Indians Cubs in 2016, right? How do you not include Cavs Warriors in that series? Because there were so many stories within that game seven, and it's not just about the block, the shot, the stop. Okay. J.R. Smith, if he doesn't go off early in that third quarter and knock down those three-pointers, I don't know that the Cavaliers are even in the game the fourth quarter. There are just so many little plot lines within that singular game. And Prime didn't even include it. And it just, I thought it was
Stunning. Across sports, that has to be one of the best game sevens of all time.
It is.
Right? Definitely, like, when you think about the NBA, it has to be up there in the NBA. Also, like, Jordan never went to a Game 7 in the finals. That's always the big talking point. It's like, he never had to go to a Game 7, and LeBron did. That's why he's better, right, is the thing that people point to. So you don't have, like, a Jordan iconic Game 7 moment.
Yeah.
So it's like, that was, and for them to do it, like, the circumstances around it. I mean, Daryl, you know this about me. Like, I openly have talked about, like, growing up because of family ties and memories I have with my dad, a Red Sox fan.
Yeah,
right?
So, by the way, Amazon Prime, the first episode, and you'll love it. It's the Yankees beating the Red Sox in the 2003 ALCS.
No. Did they do 04, though, when the Red Sox returned the favor in 04? I don't know. Anyway, but along those lines, like, I have said that the 2016 comeback for the Cavs was more impressive than what the Red Sox pulled off in 04. And the reason I said it was because, like, coming back from 3-1 down against that Warriors team, like, the Yankees team was good that year when the Red Sox came back against them, but the Red Sox were, like, right there. Like, their records were very, very close that season.
Yeah.
It was like people thought going into that series, it could go either way. And those two teams are both good. This Warriors team was historically great. It looked like nobody was going to beat them. And then the Cavs get down 3-1 and somehow pull themselves out of it to win the series. They went 3 straight. And LeBron to have the performances that he had, the iconic moments of the block, the shot, and then Kevin Love gets his kind of heyday with the stop that they threw in there. Like, just so many cool things that happened along the way to make that happen. I've said it was more memorable. It was a bigger or more difficult thing to pull off than what the Red Sox did in 04.
You want to know what the NBA one is?
It has to be up there.
They picked over Cavs Warriors Game 7. They did Spurs Mavericks Game 7. Like, really?
Mm.
No championship was won there.
I don't even think, like, yeah, that's disappointing. That's really, I want to watch this now and see, like, why they, like, get a sense of, like, why they picked that.
Like, really? I mean, I realized that, like, it was the rise of Dirk Nowitzki, and I get, but, like, no championship was won in that Game 7.
No. Yeah, that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't.
They did pick some good hockey ones, though. Rangers winning the Stanley Cup. Edmonton Oilers in 87.
Okay.
Yeah, like, so, but still, my favorite is episode one, and that was the Yankees beating the Red Sox in 2003 in the ALCS. Only because you're sitting here.
I appreciate it.
As a Red Sox
fan. Appreciate the jab there, Daryl. It's okay. I've seen enough championship. I shouldn't say that because I would love to see.
But you know what? You and Mitch get along so well, so it is proof that Yankees and Red Sox fans can get along.
Is he still on that train where he's rocking two teams?
No, I gave that up.
Oh, he's listening. He's listening.
Well, I would hope so.
He did get bullied into it.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.